continue talking about how we use a cavity as a control element and as a way of coupling qubits. So, and we saw that we can use a qubit to couple qubits. And although we didn't show it, a cavity by itself we can't use as a qubit because of the unary structure. So that as I try to drive two levels of a cavity, I'm going to keep populating higher levels. And of course, a qubit says that I have just a two-level system. So we could take a harmonic oscillator and we could modify it so that it's anharmonic. And of course, every physical harmonic oscillator is truly anharmonic. But, you know, strictly for a qubit, we'd like to be able to say that we have control over two levels and that those two levels are going to be connect to hold all the dynamics. But the cavity is a useful element in terms of preparing, measuring, and controlling and coupling qubits. So we go back to looking at our cavities. And we started off with a simple Hamiltonian that connected the cavity and the qubit. So we had the quantization of the qubit, the harmonic oscillator, so the quantization of the cavity. And then we have this term, which is the coupling. And it's useful to remember that, you know, if I had only the harmonic oscillator and I wanted to drive the levels of the harmonic oscillator, then that would be the drive that I would see of the harmonic oscillator. And if I had only a qubit and wanted to drive the qubit frequency by Rabi, that would be the Hamiltonian I would have here. And by having this coupling, what we're saying is that the two interact and can drive each other. But we haven't introduced any external drive on this system, right? All of the dynamics are given internally. So there's, you know, at this point, we have our qubit in a harmonic oscillator, and there's nothing else hooked up to it. Okay. And then what we did was we expanded this, we went into a rotating frame, and when we expanded this term, you know, we saw as expected that there were terms that a photon would move, or an excitation, let's just call it an excitation, would move between the qubit and the cavity, or there were two excitation versions. And we kept just the term where the excitation oscillates between the cavity and the qubit. So this was the quantum Rabi. And going to the rotating wave, then we kept the Jane's Cumming piece. Which looks very similar. And the only difference being that we just keep this term that says an excitation moves between those two. Now, as we look here, so let's say that explicitly. And of course, such dynamics, we've known about them and have been able to use them for a long time. But it's only recently that we can create in the radio frequency and in the microwave frequency cavities that are high enough Q to enable this. In optics, of course, one can do that. And there's a beautiful series of experiments from Serge Hirsch looking at one atom in a cavity and the interactions of that. He also had a beautiful set of experiments where you would take a molecular beam and you would have one atom, and then he would send it between two cavities and be able to demonstrate that the interaction of that one atom slowly translating through the two cavities could lead to an entangled state of those two cavities. Yeah. A hard way to build a quantum computer, but a beautiful set of physics. Okay. Now, once we took the James Cumming Hamiltonian, and we've identified our Hilbert space, as the qubit tensored the number of states, right? So that will span the basis that we want to look at. Then we can apply the James Cumming Hamiltonian to a state. I want to look at it in terms of two states, because the James Cumming Hamiltonian is going to take us into a set of subspaces. And we're going to look at the eigenstates within those subspaces. And so we wrote this out as well. So just the effective energy terms. Plus a transition introduced by moving this excitation around. Right, and so we've moved the excitation from the cavity into the qubit. And if I look at the corresponding one, so now the qubit energy changes sign. The the oscillator frequency is as it was. And so now that we can see that if I look at just a subspace of those two states, that the James Cumming Hamiltonian connects those to each other and doesn't connect them to anything else. So here we have our subspace. Structure. And so now if I look at this subspace, I can write down a Hamiltonian that's indexed by the number of photons, the number of excitations I have in the system. And the convention, you know, here, the number of excitations is actually n plus 1. But because you'll see that the ground state is just going to hang out there and not get mixed, then the convention is to index the Hamiltonian by n. Just keeps the counting the same. Typical, I have my notes wrong, but what I write on the board is correct. Okay, so now that we have our Hamiltonian in the subspace, and Cohen Tanuji then defined these in terms of a dress states picture, which is, of course, just a little bit of jargon, says, find the eigenstates, right? So we find the eigenstates. And of course, there better be two of them. Hey, and I promised myself I would point out, it's an oddity of this, that we have G here, which is a parameter in the Hamiltonian. And that G says that there's a coupling strength between the qubit and the Hamiltonian. That's usually going to be the overlap of some field or a dipole moment. And then, of course, we're using G to index the ground state, right? They have nothing to do with each other. It's just bad nomenclature that's used everywhere in the world. Okay, so now then we have our two eigenstates in the subspace. And of course, given those two eigenstates, we can write down their energies. Like so. And we'll make a final note that if I take the Jaynes-Cumming Hamiltonian and I apply it to the ground state, then of course we just get the energy of the ground state. And notice, as we would expect, that there's no G dependence, right? There's no mixing of the ground states. Okay. So this is the general piece. And then we want to think about Well, how do I want to use this piece? I might want to use it as a way of connecting a cavity to a qubit, because the cavity is bigger, and it's going to be easier to get excitations out of the cavity into some other systems. So if I want to make a repeater, then I would take the superconducting qubit, or the trapped ion, or whatever it is, and then I would put the excitation from that into the cavity. And then we connect the cavity to some photonic system that would allow it to get out of the system. If I make a quantum processor, I might use the cavity to connect a variety of qubits, or I could use the cavity, we'll see, to detect the state of a qubit. So there's a lot of different ways that we can engineer to use this cavity now as a quantum device, although by itself, it's never going to be a qubit.
How would you connect the microwave photons to photons?
So you would connect them first to your cavity, and then you would go into a photonic device where you have your photonic device as a hanging string, and you would use the phonons and the optical excitations. So, you know, because as a string moves, it can also modulate the phonon spectrum, then you can connect via that string from microwave to RF, microwave to optical. Yeah. You're supposed to say, well, I'll show up in your lab tomorrow. Show me.
Yeah. Do you guys have devices that do that? No, we
don't. We have a project to build such a device as a collaboration with other people at IQC. But we don't have it.
When you say that it's done through phonons, it makes me think that's kind of like a bad way. Like, phonons to me just sound like the thermal and, like, not coherent.
I know, right? See? Old-fashioned classical physicist over here, pretending she's quantum. So, I mean, that's the point of saying that we can make this string so that we can exclude everything that doesn't fit within its eigenstructure and effectively filter out everything else. And the same thing's going to happen here, that we say, oh, I have a cavity, but it's very hard for something to live in the cavity if it doesn't fit the energy spectrum of the cavity. And so it's a way of excluding other things. But you're right, that in general, you know, we think of phonons as being a messy system, like what we saw with the NVs, that you know, you should have this nice sharp transition that tells you about the state of the NV, except it's smeared out by your phonon spectrum, and so you can't rely upon that energy measurement. And therefore, I can't use, in the NV, we could use the magnetic energy levels as qubits, but I couldn't use the electronic excited states as a qubit because they had this random term from the phonons. Yeah? But here, we'll be nice and clean. So I want to look at the case where the qubit and the cavity have the same energy. And so now then, we have two ladder structures, one for the ground state and one for the excited state. And they're going to be offset because, of course, in the excited state of the qubit, we always have one excitation. So we have a ladder structure of the cavity. Of course, it goes on forever. And like so. And of course, this piece simply says this thing hangs out. So when there's no excitations, there's a well-defined ground state. But that piece says that in the case where the resonance frequencies are the same, or even close, that we get a mixing of these two states. And so we have the state plus zero and minus zero, and an energy separation of 2G. And so here, and we get this again. And I get it again. And here, the energy separation is 2g square root of 2 and 2g square root of 3, etc. And so we get a set of subspaces. And those transitions are allowed, because those are the transitions that are single excitation transitions. We have a level here that's plus one and minus one. And plus one. And of course, from here, you can't have a transition. But from here, you can have a transition. Okay? So we can keep going up. What we'll want to do is we'll want to be mostly in this manifold here. Okay? And the nice thing is, if I'm sitting over here or I'm sitting over here, then of course the harmonic oscillator looks harmonic. And as we drive it, will drive all of these levels. And if you haven't seen, if you haven't carried out the simulation yourself of driving a harmonic oscillator from its ground state and seeing the interferences that build up with states, you know, it's a fun thing to whip up your Mathematica program and have a look at. Here, of course, those interferences won't happen because there's an energy difference between those states. All right. Now, I want to go back and look at these states, same ones I drew up there, but in the case where the qubit and cavity frequency are the same. So under those conditions, we end up creating entangled states. But these dress states are entangled in the original basis. And that's a pretty common thing to see. That when we go into this basis where an excitation can't distinguish between two quantum systems, in this case the cavity and the qubit, it would be the same thing if there were two qubits. Then we end up in that basis creating states that are equal superpositions of the excitation in either of the elements. And of course, then those would be entangled states if we were talking about these bases, right? They're just the eigenstates of this basis, right? But we're able to move between those. All I need to do is to change the qubit frequency or the cavity frequency away from the other, and to do that by a difference that's large compared to g. And if I do that by a distance large compared to g, then I'll go from being within this eigenstructure to these eigenstructures. And then, of course, we have an entangled state that we can treat as an entangled state. Okay. Now, the first thing one would like to do then, if you say, oh, well, I have an entangled state, let's use that to control our system. So we imagine that we have our cavity and we have two qubits, A and B. And I'm going to control the G between these. So I'll turn the G on and off. And so we start off in the state like so. And then we connect the A qubit to the cavity. And add one excitation. And so we end up in this state. Where we have one excitation, of course, the other qubit is hanging out and is, remains a separable state, but now I have this one piece that's there. And then disconnect A and connect B. And allow the excitation to move. And we can end up in a state that is that's here. So we say, yeah, I've added an excitation. I've added an excitation that went into the qubit, or it went into the cavity. And of course, it couldn't go into the first qubit, into A, because A is disconnected. And then, of course, here we see that we're done. Turns out it's a little bit easier to do this where you would also create some probability that you're in the zero manifold, and then post-select on having one photon in the cavity. But this is a straightforward way, not the most efficient way. And I wanted to spend a little bit of time looking at a more efficient way. But it gives a sense of our control, that we can have a cavity, and although it's not going to be a qubit for us, it can hold on to an excitation, and it can slosh it around between the other quantum systems. And if we can control the number of excitations in the system, then we're golden. But that's our limit. We need to control the number of excitations in the system.
Can I ask a question, David?
Yeah, of course.
If it was an optical cavity,
yeah,
that amount to putting a single photon into that cavity?
Yeah.
And then how would it work in the microwave break cavities?
We can generate a single photon in the microwaves as well. So
how do you do that?
By taking your qubit, which is only has two levels.
So you excite that first, and then you...
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, the challenging piece today is to get G big enough that you can do all of this without populating everything else. And that's, of course, also why you want to be down here, where the difference in energy levels is large. You know, we can go and count, and John Martinez and others have shown that you can use your cavity to store a fixed number, and you can read them out. And it all works well, provided you have a good memory, classical memory of what you did, so you know what the next step should be, right? Because the next step depends upon where you are in that ladder.
And can you remind me how you excite the superconducting qubit?
Again, with microwaves.
Okay.
We can do it with others as well, but...
But it's not in the cavity.
No. Again, we could use the same cavity to excite that, and then I would need to add a term to the Hamiltonian.
But it would be just like with a coherent state or something.
No. Because you're a two-level system, right, so we don't want to talk about coherent states, right? I mean, for my thought on coherent states is that's the statistical mechanics where we have a ladder and we're looking at the structures over that. If I have a two-level system, right, then it's simply going to oscillate between those.
Yeah.
And if I have a single copy of a two-level system, then it can only give me back one photon,
mm-hmm,
right? So I can interact with more than one photon, but it can only give me back one. And it's that only give me back piece that gives us the control. Okay, so let's look here, and now let's do this. I want you to remember, we had this example where we had two qubits coupled by a dipolar Hamiltonian that were leading to that we're going to use to mediate the coupling between two qubits that were not coupled. And we saw that we could create an effective Hamiltonian here that said that if there was a swap here and there was a swap there, that was an allowed transition. Okay, we can do the same thing here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to couple two qubits via a virtual coupling to the cavity. So I want the two qubits to have the same frequency. And of course, we require that over here. Otherwise, that flip-flop process wouldn't have worked. So we have two qubits that have the same frequency. And they don't talk to each other, of course. And I'm going to detune the cavity
from them by amount delta.
Okay, so that
omega c minus omega q is equal to delta.
And of course, in this case, we needed to have a different energy between this system and that system, so that here we could flip these two conditioned, or we could, and we would flip those two, but there was never an excitation that went from here to there, right? So we've got the cavity detuned, and now then our Hamiltonian looks like this. So, forgetting that term, well, even this term, right? This term, in this case, would have been omega of this, right? Otherwise, this looks like exactly what we had in that case. And if I draw up the energy level diagrams, then again, the ground state hangs out by itself. These could be above or below that level. That's the coupling frequency. This is the detuning. Like so. And of course, this process leads to transitions between those two levels. And so by bringing two qubits into resonance with each other, although they don't see each other, but they do see the cavity, and having them detuned from the cavity, it doesn't work if the cavity is tuned, because then you bring this level up there and the whole thing becomes a mess. You want to keep that level out of your picture. That's why you detune. So then here, what you end up having is a coherent oscillation. And if you started with an excitation in one of the qubits, then you could swap it between the two, or you could do a square root of swap and create an entangled state. Now, I still need to convince you that that's the right Hamiltonian. So let's look at our detuned cavity. So we can write down the energies for these, although I've already drawn it for you. Okay, so we have those two energies. And basically, you know, we're saying that we've got this coupling piece that depends upon n. And it's going to add as a vector to the cavity and qubit frequencies. And what I want to do at this point is a little bit of sleight of hand, which is another way of saying I'm going to do something that's not correct, but it's useful. I'm going to take it and look in the regime where the detuning is big compared to G. And of course, by this piece, what I mean is I'm never going to look high up in a ladder structure. I'm going to look at small numbers of excitations. So if you allow me to do that, then I can say, well, this energy sort of looks like without that square root, because we're very close to one. And the reason I want to do that is that therefore this thing looks like a ladder structure. Okay? So if you allow me that cheat, then this piece is perfectly valid. Having cheated already. And I can write down the ladder structures very much like I've done here. So I say, oh, I have a manifold for the ground state, which is a ladder, so 0, 1, 2, of omega q minus g squared over delta. And then I have another ladder structure for the excited state, but the energy difference is omega q plus g squared over delta. And now, everything's possible. Because what that tells me is that the cavity knows and can report on the structure of the qubit. Right? The resonance frequency of the cavity is going to tell you whether you're in the ground state or the excited state. And you can probe the resonance frequency of the cavity with a non-demolition measurement. So I can send a photon into the cavity, and I can tell the frequency of the cavity by the phase shift introduced with the returning photon. The whole photon will come back. Okay, so we're probing a cavity. We can shine, under this model, any number of photons we want. The photons are going to come back. And we can set this up so that if I have my cavity in my qubit, right, this is our lambda over 2 transition line, we put a capacitor here to couple in, and here I connect my synthesizer. I'll try to send a photon, and it'll be, you know, picture yourself in one of these science museums where they have a big rock that's swinging back and forth on a chain. You know that, you know, these things are fun to play with, right? Because you go up there and you push it and you can't move it. You know, it doesn't matter how hard you push. But if you push it gently in the right times, you can get it swinging. Okay? But if I send a photon in to it, I push it gently, then as I interact over that period. That's what a photon says. You're interacting over a period. The phase that I get back will tell me whether what the energy difference is between what I'm pushing with and what the thing is swinging with. And that's what we're going to do here. And so now this way, we learn the structure. And if I'm sitting over here, I say, oh yeah, I can use this detuning to keep this level out of the way and have a photon exchange. Or if I'm sitting over here, I can say, I can use this detuning to non-destructively learn the state of my qubit.
Are you saying the phase is written on the photon?
Yeah, the phase is in, you know, if we're really thinking about this as a photon, you come in with a photon, you're scattering, that phase would be a delay. It's just like you had a media with a different susceptibility. Okay? So, all of this, the first piece, these cavities, they give you a nice way of controlling a quantum system. They open up ways of building networks of quantum systems. They allow you to convert frequencies and couple qubits that don't have the same frequency within quantum systems. And they give you a good way of reading out. And it's unfortunate that I'll miss all of the what happens when we add cooling to the system. But there's a lot of nice physics there. There's a lot of nice physics in the high frequency terms of the quantum Rabi Hamiltonian in terms of squeezing, in terms of cooling. But what we'll do next class, tomorrow, is we'll start talking about superconductivity and try to quickly get to a qubit there. Any questions? Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. I have a question.
Yeah.
So if it's just a phase delay that's been put on the photon, then do you actually need it to be a photon to make that measurement, or could you just send in a weak coherent?
Yeah, you could send in a weak coherent pulse. So you can get good statistics out of that measurement, and of course, if the system is in one of the eigenstates, then it's very easy to tell. And if I thought about this in terms of I want to use it as a readout for some part of my processor, then I want the qubit to be in an eigenstate. And that's a piece that one needs to remember. Let's say you're doing quantum error correction. And I'm going to use this measurement to set the error correction step. So I go and I interrogate the qubit in a Q and D fashion. I have a effective POVM measurement of that qubit with some probability. It's in some state. I do some operation that's leading me to error correction. I still must remove the information. So the last step that we often forget about is you need to take that qubit you measured and you need to put it back in its ground state. You need to remove that entropy.
Okay.